So I'm going to share a Dharma exploration and some exciting thing that's been going on with me. So I'm looking forward to that. Okay. We generally do feel better after we meditate, but that's not all of the benefits of our practice, is it? The results are not just immediate, but cumulative. With regular practice, we may notice a shift in our relationship to everything in our lives. Insights may arise, and we pause to notice them and consider them. Insights abound when we least expect them. The wisdom is often very simple, but as we consider it, it reveals its Dharma depth. A few simple words can shift our understanding completely. It's helpful to explore the Dharma, to hear the talks, but it's those few words that come unbidden to us that are just what we need to hear. A few years ago, I was having a conversation with Jack Kornfield to share with the teachers and Sangha leaders of the Buddhist Insight Network, where I serve on the board. And there's one thing that he said that has stayed with me. Jack said, "When you begin to teach the Dharma has its way with you." And I just love that. The Dharma has its way with you. Because it's so true. It's just so true. Suddenly you just hunger for it in a way, and you're exploring it in a way that maybe before you didn't quite do, or when it was all about you. But when it's something to share, then it's just even juicier. So the Dharma has its way with you. That really spoke to me. But it's not just when we are sharing the Dharma, but when we dedicate ourselves to the practice and the investigation in an open and receptive way. When I come to this Sangha, I know I am speaking to a group of dedicated students of the Dharma, and I am so appreciative of all your practice. You're attending many Dharma talks and probably reading lots of books and going on retreats when you can. And I hope that this dedication is open and receptive rather than a dogged pursuit of achievement. Because, at least in my experience, it is more truly a kind of dance, allowing the Dharma to take the lead, to have its way with us, but still very much on our own 2 feet on the ground. But the Dharma, we're receptive and allowing the Dharma to lead us around the dance floor of life. In this way of learning and exploring the Dharma, in this dance, we discover the beauty of being alive, aware of the nature of impermanence and the interconnection of all life. And we know dukkha well, of course. We all have suffering. But because we recognize it, we know when Mara wants to cut in and lead us in an exhausting dance with steps we don't understand, trying to keep us constantly off kilter and stumbling around while Mara laughs and mocks us. And thanks to our dedicated practice, Mara can't find a foothold, can't cut in on the dance floor of our lives. And if that tempter does succeed, well, we bow politely and take a break, take a breath, take time to reconnect with our refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Now, we have probably all learned this the hard way, and we probably are still falling for Mara's ways from time to time. But we know our way back. We know the value of this practice, this Sangha, these teachings. And part of the dance is the openness to receive insights. By being fully present in each moment, We become attuned to the Dharma that rises unbidden from within us when we make the space to receive it. Now, I wonder, have you ever had a book just jump off the library shelf, offering exactly the answer you needed at that time? Even maybe to a question you didn't realize you were asking. Have you ever heard from a friend, maybe somebody you hadn't seen in a long time, who just happened to share information perfectly timed for your understanding? This can be about very practical things, but it can also be pretty profound. Once we are attuned to life, answers are everywhere. But what is our question? And can we be fully present to receive the answers that are offered up by life loving itself into being? Of course, one of the places we are most receptive and least distracted is on retreat. The insights that have had the most profound effect on me were all received on retreat, either at Spirit Rock or on a nature retreat or on a personal retreat of sorts when I was slowly recovering from an illness when I was in my 40s. I call it my 9-month horizontal retreat. Maybe you can think of some instances in your own life when you created enough space and awareness for your inner wisdom to be heard. And I hope when that happens that you write it down and make it available to yourself to read it over so that it can offer the wisdom anew each time, addressing different challenges and circumstances. Of course, inner wisdom doesn't perform on command. We need to set the stage for it. We meditate. We cultivate mindfulness so we are present for all that arises, including words of wisdom, whether they arise unbidden from our own thinking process or arrive fully formed from words composed by another, words that activate our inner wisdom. We might consider these words, however they arrive, gifts of our practice. So my most recent book is a book of meditative poems, Invitation to Insight. And I'll share one poem here about a gift. It's called The Gift. May I open the gift of this moment without expectation, anticipation, frustration. May I gently attend its unwrapping, unentangled by ribbon nooses of my own making, undistracted by tissue paper patterns of longing and despair. May the gift of life amaze me at every turn. May I greet whatever is revealed with gratitude and wonder. So that's Invitation to Insight. All my books you can find through my website. Find links to where you can buy them, including at the Spirit Rock Bookstore. So going back to Jack's wonderful phrase of letting the Dharma have its way with us, opening to this dance, as I see it. If we are totally present to read the cues, answers arise to questions we may not even been aware we had been asking. And one of my questions for the past few years has been how to give my students what they've been asking for, which is a book on the Eightfold Path based on how I teach it, which uses a metaphor I developed that explains how the eight aspects work together and makes it easier to remember them. Well, as much as I believed in the importance of doing that, I kept putting it off. You know how it is. I had written so much about the Eightfold Path over the past 20 years that it seemed more of a reviewing and selecting and assembling task rather than a creative one that might inspire me. So I decided to wait until after I'd taken the 8-month-long Living Dharma program with Mark Coleman and Don Mauricio through Spirit Rock. That was all about the Eightfold Path, and we took on a different aspect of the Eightfold Path every month. And it was a very rich and rewarding experience, and I think Don offers it every year, maybe with a different co-teacher. But it was very rich for me, and Mark is one of my primary teachers, so I really appreciated that. I figured correctly that taking the course would make me more enthused and ensure my own understanding was accurate. And it did. It was one especially wonderful to meet so many people from all over who cared as much about the Dharma and specifically the Eightfold Path as I do. After all, the Eightfold Path is the Buddha's prescription. It's the ultimate truth of the Four Noble Truths, it says. That's where he directs us to the Eightfold Path. And the Eightfold Path contains everything we need. All the teachings, all those lists are within it in one way or another. But after the course, I still wasn't excited about compiling my writings into book form, but I had promised my students. Then I went on a nature retreat with Ann Cushman, another favorite teacher of mine. And in the silence of that retreat, ideas started percolating. I thought, I know, I'll create a workbook that's a downloadable free PDF so that people can print out as many pages as they want of different parts of it, and they can pick out their own notebook at Staples or wherever and decorate it however they want and make it just so very personal. And then they can add more pages this place and that, and they can keep doing different things, and they can grow and learn in their own way, in their own way of walking the Eightfold Path. So I thought that was a pretty great idea. And it was a relief to have an idea that ticked off a lot of boxes on the list. And I still plan to create that workbook of Eightfold Path exercises. But meanwhile, in part from having been on a nature retreat, I began to notice a lot of repeating synchronistic patterns in my life. Things started showing up again and again and again and again in a myriad of ways. And it's like they're saying, "Hey, look at me. Hey, over here." And I just kept going, "Huh, that's funny. Huh, that's funny. Huh, that's funny." And eventually it began to fill my dreams as well. And then a few months ago, maybe it was only 2 months ago, I don't remember, but in the middle of the night, I woke up with this huge aha. Oh, that's how I can share that information in a way that is fresher, more meaningful, more memorable, and more in keeping with my own idea of how I enjoy doing things. I'm more of a creative writer than a nonfiction writer. So for me, it's just much more fun to do something in a poem or a short story or even a novel. I mean, it's very important for things to be fun. If it's not fun to write something, how much fun could it possibly be to read it? So I accepted the invitation to let the Dharma have its way with me. And I've been caught up in a wonderful dance of creativity ever since. And it all came together in a dream. And since then, the project has been writing itself as if I am just the dutiful scribe of the words pouring through me. Now that's fun. But perhaps the biggest surprise is that the book took the form of a novel. Now, if that seems crazy, consider again that the Buddha said to teach in the language of the people. And novels are an important way, an important part of the way that we learn as modern, people of the world today. We learn a lot through novels. We learn, about history retold in many different ways. We learn about things that were overlooked in history. And we also learn about ourselves through reading about other people going through something maybe similar to what we're going through. And it's often much deeper and more meaningful than a nonfiction book that says, well, A, do this, B, do that. Sometimes that just isn't what we need. So not only is that more fun for me creatively, I'm pretty sure that written in novel form, the teachings will be more easily received and understood. Then, with the free offer of the downloadable PDF workbook pages, the Dharma shared can be explored and incorporated more fully into the readers' lives. So, I thought I would share an excerpt from the work in progress. I'll give you a little background. The story takes place on a nature retreat, where each of the eight retreatants is responsible for leading a discussion of a particular aspect, and they're each asked to choose the aspect that they find the most challenging in their lives so that they can really explore it more deeply beforehand and they can lead what becomes the discussion on each one. Much of what is shared comes from my teachings over the years, but I've had the fun of having the multi-generational characters speak from their own voices and own life experiences. So the particular excerpt that I'm going to read offers an overview of the cooking pot analogy. The cooking pot analogy I have been sharing for many years. My teacher, Anna Douglas, one of the co-founders of Spirit Rock, approved my cooking pot analogy when I started using it, and other teachers have as well. So I've always felt very confident. But the main thing about it is it's made it so easy for people to understand it. So to set the stage, it is the first night of the retreat, and one of the co-leaders is going to present Wise View. But the other co-leader, an older woman named Lily, will first give an overview of the Eightfold Path. Now, picture this: the eight retreatants are assembled in a circle around a campfire, and in over the campfire, sitting on a trivet, is a large solid pot where the water for tea is being heated. So Lily, the co-leader, says, and I quote, "Since this is our first time, this is our first night together. Before I share my views on the aspect of, oh, so this isn't Lily, sorry. This is Vicente, and he's going to turn it over to Lily. And Vicente says, since this is our first night together, before I share my views on the aspect of wise view, Lily's going to give us a brief overview of the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path. This is, after all, our focus for the retreat, and it's good to be reminded of the general scope of what we're about. So, Lily looked at each member of the circle and radiated her appreciation for each of them. Eva, that's the main character who we're following this whole thing through. Eva could see how her smile nourished them. She figured Lily was going to review the Eightfold Path for her benefit, but no one else seemed to mind at all. In fact, they looked eager to hear what Lily would say. This is Lily. The Eightfold Path is the Buddha's prescription to end the suffering he recognized in himself and the world. The dukkha that we cause ourselves. I love that word, dukkha, don't you? It really nails it. Doo-doo, kaka. There's no English word that could capture it so well. But the literal meaning of dukkha is worth remembering. It means an ill-fitting axle hole. Connor laughed. Connor is the youngest of the group. Eva had to admit that seeing this elder talking about shit and something that sounded very much like asshole was pretty funny. Ill-fitting axle hole, Lily went on. Just imagine how that would feel. Living your life riding around in a wooden cart, and there's this one wheel that keeps going kerplunk, kerplunk, kerplunk. Maybe you complain about it. Maybe you stop paying attention to it. But there it is, just under the surface of your awareness, the background of your whole life, this annoyance, this not perfect, not what you would choose, but it feels like you have no choice. This dukkha, which is often a subtle suffering, is what the Buddha recognized and what he set about to cure. I won't retell the story most of you know so well about how he went about to do this, and if you don't know it, you can easily find out. But what was the prescription he came up with for? What was the prescription he came up with for dealing with dukkha? Here she looked around the circle, and everybody but Eva. This main character has come upon this group, by the way, Eva. Everyone but Eva chimed in. The Noble Eightfold Path. And Lily says, exactly. It's such an important guide to living, and it's a perfect foundation for exploring all the Buddha's teachings. But to use it and benefit from it, we have to remember it. Otherwise, it's just one more of the Buddha's many lists. That man did love his lists. Everyone nodded and laughed. It was as if Lily was talking about just some guy. Eva thought they would be speaking about him with more devotion, more reverence. Clearly, they respected him and were grateful to him for his insights and teachings. But he was, after all, a man, one who, though he was high-born in his Indian community, suffered and struggled and searched. She knew enough about the historical Buddha to know that. Now she wanted to learn more. Lily went on, lists, lists, and more lists, each one so valuable. But how do we remember all the aspects of all these lists? We have to experience them. They have to bloom within us. We have to have our own aha moments with each precious one. And of course, we'll all have our favorites, the ones that we see more clearly, the ones that resonate. But the Eightfold Path is not just another list. It is the container through which we can understand and apply in our lives all the other lists. So it's always felt to me to be the most important list, this prescription that addresses the dukkha we all experience. Now, sitting here earlier this evening, it came to me that we have a very useful metaphor we can use to explore the Eightfold Path. Feel free to use it or not, but the more I think about it, the more helpful it seems. She looked around and everyone seemed intrigued. The beauty is we don't even have to use our imaginations. We can look at the center of our circle. Now everyone looked puzzled. Lily laughed. The pot, she said, as if that would make it clear. Everyone looked more puzzled. Okay, she said, let's explore and see if this makes as much sense to you as it did to me earlier. Let's call it the cooking pot analogy. When Minna was stirring our delicious evening soup, I noticed how the pot, the fire, the spoon, and the plumes of steam rising up all work in relation to each other. The aspects of the Eightfold Path do as well. First, let's look at the pot. We'll call it wise view because it is the container for conscious thought where wisdom can be cultivated. The spoon handle is mindfulness, stirring steadily. There's a quality of spacious awareness to the dedicated stirring, aware of everything, in touch with everything, exposed to everything. But the part of the spoon that is submerged is concentration. The single-pointedness that touches the pot of wise view and stirs up insights, wisdom, and awakening. But nothing gets cooked up in the pot of wise view if there's no fire. The initial flame of the match is wise intention. That's Eva, she said, nodding at her. Eva had lit the match for the fire. And the beautifully laid logs and kindling, thanks, Eddie, represent wise effort. Now, as you know, traditionally wise speech, wise action, and wise livelihood are taught up front. But as I understand it, the Buddha was teaching mostly young men living as monks in community, and I imagine they needed a lot of moral guidance. But we've all been raised by parents who taught us right from wrong, and whether or not we behaved well when we were young, we wouldn't be on this retreat now as adults if we were inclined to go out and rob banks or kill anyone. If anything, many of us are dealing with inner voices, inner critics, judging us, and even beating us up about what we should or shouldn't do. We've internalized society's explanation of right and wrong, all tangled up with shame and punishment. Maybe in your meditation and contemplation, you've begun to notice those voices. Maybe you've noticed that they want you to do the right things for all the wrong reasons. And without wise intention and wise view, our efforts to appease them in our words and actions come out all wrong. We can have compassion for these inner critics, seeing how submerged in greed, aversion, and delusion they are. But when we let them guide us, we lose our way and get into trouble. So, we're cultivating awareness and we're recognizing the ill-conceived ideas that crop up. Just as young Siddhartha, after 6 years of grueling practice, sat under that Bodhi tree and began to recognize Mara, the tempter. And instead of going into battle with Mara, he met each temptation with clear recognition. Whether the images were demons to scare him or dancing girls to seduce him, he knew they were illusions to distract him from his purpose of awakening. Out of the depths of his wisdom and compassion, at each encounter, he would say, "Ah, Mara, I know you," and the images would disappear. This awareness that we're cultivating is what we're cooking in the pot of wise view. Consciousness gaining clarity through the stirring of mindfulness and concentration, through the steady heat of wise effort, sparked by the flame of wise intention. But what about sila? What about wise speech, action, and livelihood? Where do our words and actions come from? They rise up like steam from the cooking pot, directly from the other aspects, our view, our level of awareness, our effort, and our intention. If they are wise, the steam will have a delightful aroma that will be wholesome and beneficial. If they are unskillful, that steam will be a foul stench, wafting out and polluting the air with misery. And that's it. That's all the aspects of the Eightfold Path. Voila! Everyone stared at the center of the circle, at the Eightfold Path metaphor dancing before them. Eva thought it was a pretty impressive 3D visual presentation, and she had never even heard of the Eightfold Path before. "Thank you, Lily," Vicente said, meaning it. "I can just envision it all, and I can see how it would really help not only to remember the aspects, but to see how they work together. Because although it's called the Eightfold Path, it's not linear, is it?" So, if all of you like this cooking pot analogy too, he looked around and everyone was nodding and smiling, then wise view is still a good place to start, because you can't do much cooking without a pot. So I am going to do a share screen and share the visual. Of the Eightfold Path. Okay, so you can see the cooking pot of wise view, the flame of wise intention, the logs laid, the wise effort, and of course there's kindling in there. Maybe you can't see it, but it's there, trust me. And then the spoon of mindfulness, and as it goes into that consciousness, that concentration, and then the plumes of steam of wise speech, action, and livelihood. And you might notice there's a little triple gem, and that's the trivet that holds up the pot of wise view so that it doesn't topple over. So we take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So that's my little offering for the evening. And you are the first to hear it. And of course, it's in a very rough stage, as you can tell. And there's probably lots of editing that needs to be done. But I wanted to share that with you because I can't imagine a group of people who would have more insight to hear and say something about it. And say, oh, Stephanie, that doesn't work at all. But I did rely heavily on what I've learned over the years, and of course on Bhikkhu Bodhi's book, The Noble Eightfold Path, Way to the End of Suffering, and other books that I've read, and of course the Living Dharma program that I took with Mark and Dawn. So I'm going to leave that up for a minute more in case you still want to look at it, but feel free to raise your hand and unmute yourself when I call on you. I can only see a few of you at a time, but I imagine you'll show up. You raise your hand. Probably have questions. A lot to take in. It's a whole different way of looking at it. Maybe not for everyone, because some of you have followed my blog for years and might be all too familiar with this.
I thought it was really brilliant, actually, and but I have one small suggestion, because I'm a writer as well, and I the same as you, is it like the creativity? And I feel like when you first started, I thought it was so beautifully written. When you first started, I thought it was going to go a different direction, where you heard something in their life that.
Oh, that'll come.
Oh, okay, yeah, so.
No worries.
Yeah, like it would be more like a short story for each, sorry.
That'll come. Yeah, but I'd be happy to stay in touch with you if you want to do any writing, pairing, talking, discussion. If you want to be a first reader or anything, I'm very
Sure. I
open.
mean, I imagine you could go such a great direction in terms of like self-help or something, or people having some real issues in their life that. Or, one of those characters having a real issue in their life, and that in listening to the others talk about their area of expertise, they are able to, like a whole short story about like something to that effect, that they were able to kind of conquer some difficulty that they were having. And it would be beautiful to see that like evolution.
Thank you for that. I can't see your name on here. Oh, no, Isabel.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Isabel. And
Thank you.
Barbara.
Well, I'm never going to be able to look at a pot now without thinking about that. I'm just wondering, though, now I'm looking at the stylogram and mindfulness and is mindfulness the spoon and concentration is.
Mindfulness and concentration make up the spoon. The concentration is the part that's submerged.
I see.
So
And the mindfulness
it's because the
that handle.
mindful, yeah, because concentration is single pointed and it's, and mindfulness is more global awareness, and concentration is more single pointed awareness.
Yes, I appreciated some of Isabel's comment. I too am a writer, and yes, I'm looking forward for a little bit of kind of challenge when people really come up against, some of their own stuff and have to
Yeah,
be in compromise.
it's going to be a lot of stuff.
I see.
Yeah, I don't know about a lot, but there would definitely, it's been a lot of fun to speak through these various characters and their relationship to the aspect of the Eightfold Path that they're looking at. So I, yeah, Jan. Thank you, Barbara.
So, what's in the pot?
That's consciousness.
Okay, you didn't name it.
I didn't put it in there. It started getting too like too many words in there, but in discussing it, it's consciousness.
Yeah, I think it needs to be there.
Okay.
It just to complete the image. Because
Okay.
everything else in this is named.
That is true. That is true.
And I just wanted to know what the soup was.
I think there's some carrot chunks, some few
Yeah.
peas.
Well, which means it's, it could be just life.
Yeah.
This is
Yeah.
life as opposed to consciousness. You see,
Well,
you leave it
it,
to interpretation this way.
right. But the consciousness, as in when we start talking about the five hindrances, you know how the Buddha used a pond. And the surface of the pond, and desire colors the pond, and but he also at some point used water in a pot as it. So when the person who's sharing that as part of whichever one I forget at this point shares the five hindrances, they're able to use the surface of the pot. So it's consciousness, it's our beingness,
It
it's
takes a
the
lot more
stuff.
to explain it then.
Well, the book of course explains it all.
But the others are so clear, their
I
names.
know, I know. Yeah.
Okay, I'll just leave you with that.
Okay, thank you. Okay, and Zoe.
That was a very unique perspective, so it's enjoyable. At the beginning, I think it was during the meditation you spoke about synchronicity and what was the other word that just slipped right out of my mind? It was synchronicity and also maybe how it helped you develop insight, the practice somehow. Could you speak to that a little bit more? Like what aspect of practice was that you felt to develop that for you?
Well, I talked about the words that Jack Kornfield shared about letting the Dharma have, the Dharma has its way with you. And I think that a lot of us, when we're taking on this huge, we have different ways of relating to the material, and one way is to doggedly pursue it and to, just say, well, I've got to learn this, and I've got to read the Pali Canon, and I've got to do this, and I've got to do that, and I'm going to accumulate all this knowledge, and then I'll be awakened. And that's not my experience or the experience of many people. The Dharma has its way with you when you really begin to meditate and investigate and go on retreats and have that quieting down of experience and allowing things to just arise. They can be the most simple things. Oh, geez. I remember one. I'm going to tell you one on Patty. It's just the simplest thing, Patty. I hope you don't mind. Patty, many decades ago, was walking around on a retreat, and she noticed that the same thoughts were coming up again and again, and she said, "Oh, you again." And it was like boom, it was like this big break to realize that our thoughts are just cycling through, cycling through. And that may seem like nothing, but it just liberates you to have insights. As far as synchronicity, I don't know. I have no explanation for how everything kept coming at me. I think it's just part of being open and accepting that we're not isolated fortresses of separate self, that we're part of this whole community of life. And sometimes things want to speak through us in a certain way. And that's been my experience, and I'm sure I'm not unique in that. I've heard that from others as well at different times. I will say that some of the things that happen, I'm not sharing what they were because it would give away one of the main secrets of the whole book, the whole structure of the whole book. But it was a very interesting thing that I just kept having the same, being exposed to the same experience over and over again in multiple different ways. And I finally said, okay, I guess that's, maybe what's supposed to be happening here. But if I said it, then it would shift everything about and take away the fun of it for you when you read the book. Hoping that you do. Yeah. Thank you. Liz.
You spoke to me, the Dharma is a developmental path, and I think that you were referring to a lot of that in the things that you said. That's why I like the idea of cooked. You're cooked in the Dharma, and that it takes a while for that soup to develop. And I like that metaphor of being getting cooked. Is effort the wood underneath? And
Yeah.
where is the triple gem coming in there?
Okay, so the triple gem is the those black marks. Can you see? They're like little vertical black things coming down in a little bit of a circle under the pot.
No,
That's
I
the
don't see them.
okay. Well, maybe on yours it does. It's not coming through, but
Yeah.
it's a trivet. So if you can imagine a trivet, the triple gem is a trivet that supports the pot
I see.
so that
Okay,
it's
I see.
not standing on, just sitting on the logs themselves.
Okay. Thank you. But I go nuts when I see titles of programs called Effortless Mindfulness. It just, whoa. My New York Jewish anger rises to a great bonfire. For me, this takes effort. And effort is not a dirty word. And
No, not at all.
it's not effortless, so I was very happy to see effort. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Liz. Yeah, I love, I mean, I grew up camping and my dad was really big on, making the perfect fire. And one time he and my brother went on some Boy Scout thing or Cub Scout cookout thing. And it was supposed to be a father-son bonding thing. But my dad was so much about making the perfect fire, because then they were going to win, that they didn't have that father-son bonding thing. And so making the fire that's going to be sustainable, the effort that's going to be sustainable, the effort that is mindful and is thoughtful, but not the effort that's very achievement oriented. And I'm gonna be so awakened, you won't believe how awakened I'm gonna be. Oh boy. I mean, that just doesn't work. That's just not wise effort. So definitely wise effort has to be a part of the Eightfold Path. It's intrinsic. Yeah. And of course, if you don't have wise effort, you're going to have to keep resetting your intention and resetting your intention because the fire's not going to take. So you can have going to go through a lot of matches. All right. I'm going to stop the share.